Well, good evening and a very warm welcome, one and all, to Dr. Rock's radio show here on peoplesinternetradio.com. Well, we've got a pretty full menu tonight. We've got substantial interview that I had when I was last visiting Glastonbury with Juliet Carter, who's the author with her husband, Jeeva, of a couple of books, one called World Bridger, which is their story, as it were, the story about all the strange things that have been happening to them, and how it was that they came to give birth, effectively, to a set of ceremonies which both Synchro and I have been deeply involved with for the last 15 years or so. They've also written a workbook to go with the first three ceremonies called A Holonomic Model of Transcendence. It's a very difficult thing to talk about to people who haven't actually experienced it, because the whole thing is extremely synchronistic and very peculiar. And when I was first introduced to it, some of the material I found to be a little bit difficult to swallow, but as a result of the last 15 years' work, I'm pretty much up to speed now, though still learning. We're still really integrating the results of being down to Glastonbury just before Yule to celebrate the latest ceremonies, the numbers 7 to 10. We're very surprised, as were Juliet and Jeeva, it has to be said, to find that so many of them have actually come about, but it's been as much of an adventure, I know, for Juliet and for Jeeva as it has been for everybody else who's been involved with it. There was a show a couple of weeks ago, which is on the pod page. I'll post the links in the chat box in a minute. It's called Ceremonial Solution, in which I tried to put across my feelings about these ceremonies and what they've done for me and how closely connected I feel they are with the work we're doing in the real world at People's Internet Radio, if only because when I was first introduced to the first ceremony, it really was the first time I'd heard about many of the subjects that we talk about here, about the no-fit state we're living in, about the world management team, about the rank and rife corruption and misbehaviour that's going on. And that indeed was some of the stuff that I felt a little bit dubious about, and it's because of People's Internet Radio and before it MSI and TNS that I've really, I think, got across quite a lot of that material, although, as regular listeners will know, I remain seriously shocked and surprised on a more or less daily basis by the depths of the depravity I'm witnessing around myself. There was also a show that Reflections on the Holographic Paradigm. We had Serena Roney Dougal on talking about the work of David Bohm, who's got a really very subtle and alternative understanding of the nature of the quantum world. And really quite some time ago now, a long time back, on show number 71, there was a show called Holographic Brain, Holographic Cosmos, which was looking again into the work of David Bohm and also the work of Carl Pribram, and how he was suggesting that somehow the brain appears to be a holographic receiver for all of the information in the cosmos. So all of those shows really are an attempt by me to try and explore the nature of the world that Juliet and Jeeva are living in and the kind of work they're doing. And as I say, although a lot of what Juliet says might sound strange, because to you it's hearsay, to me and to Synchro it's a kind of first-hand experience. We've been living with this material, studying it, and indeed I was one of the editors of the two books I mentioned earlier. And we've watched the development of all of this, and it's been fascinating to us. And it has made, I think you'd agree, wouldn't you, Synchro, really huge differences to our life with each one of these ceremonies we've encountered.
Massive.
And we're neither of us really workshop people, are we? We were kind of drawn in unexpectedly.
We certainly were,
And that's very much what tends to happen to, that's what tends to happen to people with the template. So I'm going to play this interview that I recorded, and we'll be back with you in a fair while, actually, and that means I'll be able to keep an eye on the chat box, and any questions that come up I will make a note of, so that I'll be able to get back to you on those as well. Thanks very much for being out there. Of course, you're listening to Dr. Rock's radio show on peoplesinternetradio.com, and here's a discussion I had in Glastonbury with one of my favourite people, Juliet Carter. So we finally get it together.
We finally get it together to have a chat.
Here we are, 25 years down the line and 10 or 11 of these template operations in.
Yeah.
And Juliet, it is just so good to have you here.
Yeah, it's a magical confluence, I would say.
Yeah, things are changing
aren't they? We're going up a gear, I think, really. The whole, the whole game is changing, really, at this point.
And we've got such a developed model that it's giving us a really comprehensive overview of its birth and its trajectory and its ultimate culmination.
But to a great extent, as it's developed, it's been very difficult to tell what it is until it's got to where it is.
Yeah.
From that perspective, if you needed to give somebody who's not come across the template at all an overview of what it is, how would you describe it?
Well, I am put in that position from time to time where I'm in a situation that's not a workshop. And someone will just ask me, well, what do you do? And really before I can answer that, I will say, well, to begin with, I have researched the true history of humanity. Because in order to understand the present and to vision the future, we need to know about the past and the truth of that past. Otherwise, we're just in the dark. And so what I have found to be personally a really good tool, a process, is to measure the degree to which I'm identifying with this world age, to which I'm identifying with what it means to be human here now, and the reality. And every day I am taught to disengage from that drama, from that reality show, that cosmic reality show that's unfolding on the earth right now. Because when you begin to identify to that, you get involved in it and you try and search out the solution at the level at which the problem is being generated, it's a bit of a dead end.
Mm-hmm.
Because you're just moving around in the entropy of a paradigm that is based on duality.
And it is a it is a sea of misconceptions and misleadings as well. You're my discoveries have been in this journey that you're actually safer to not believe a word of what you said, what you hear said, than you are to believe any of it.
Absolutely, don't even believe what you think.
Yes, even that.
that is what it's come down to.
Yeah.
And the exercise is to imagine that you have, in fact, chosen this timeline to become present on a planet that is undoubtedly in the throes of an endgame scenario. And when you can begin to perceive that planet as part of a solar system where that experiment has already played itself out. I mean, you can look at Mars for one they prepared earlier. Look at the devastation there and you will see basically the lack of symbiosis that has led to ecocide. And that is what's occurring on this planet and within the entire solar system.
And you can undeniably see it happening on this planet as well.
Yes.
You might a few years back have looked like a nutter for saying that.
Absolutely.
But now it is quite apparent that ecocide is the only word to describe what the management team are pulling off here.
That's right. Because because to begin with, the paradigm is mutant. And paradigm is not a mental exercise. You cannot sketch out mentally a paradigm. It has changed its meaning. A paradigm actually engages the higher physics of creation, right, very dynamically. And so if you can imagine that you are pure energy and consciousness that has chosen and agreed to enter into conceptual existence. And prior to your taking birth here, you had no mortal creed. You had no religion. You came as a pure field of awareness. And then you have to understand that it was inescapable that you had to take form in a vehicle or a body that was genetically modified, that was out of 3 billion base pair chemicals, that vehicle was only utilizing 60 million.
Mm. Barely 3%.
Barely 3%. And there's no escaping that. Mm. So you have to, if you can remind yourself of that literally on a daily basis, that as you came into, through birth, which was in and of itself, most unnaturally, experienced through, hospitalization and so forth.
Separation from
all kinds of things. And then you have to understand that as you came into infancy, all your sensory input was immediately contained and suppressed. And you went through a process of endless brain entrainment, mm-hmm. to the point where nothing existed unless it was named. You literally came in with the ability to perceive far more than an adult can. Mm-hmm. But slowly and surely that reality tunnel was squeezed into that which could be named through small mouth noises that we call language. Mm. And that baby is held and taken around and everything is given a name and that name is entrained into the brain and that's all that exists.
Yes.
And then you mature from that into a society that is obsessed with conformity and culture and tradition and an education that is that has no regard for individuality.
And it is actually very difficult in what is, well, I mean, we're told it's a free society, but it is actually very difficult to do anything that's different from what everybody else is doing without going into a whole passel of trouble, isn't it, really?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And the worst thing is that you have no inclination to do so because the entrainment has begun at such a very early age. And quite often there's punishment involved when you break out of that entrainment, you know, to a degree, different degrees for different people in different countries. I mean, there are, you know, there's a huge, huge ratio upon the planet where you are born into your belief system, into your, into a preordained understanding of the benevolence of your creation right there. That is a massive imposition upon the psyche and the spirit and the soul and your joy.
Yeah.
You are given a caste, a name, even a diet, and a uniform. And, you know.
And you can't break out of that either. I know you've told us that in Bali, if you want to become a vegetarian, if you want to no longer eat meat or be part of that particular machine,
be ostracized.
You get ostracized and the thing is it's not just you, your family suffers as well.
Absolutely. Yeah. And that's just a small degree, you know, of what's, cause you know, we in the West, a lot of times we don't leave on that, you know, our countries. Sometimes it's just for a 2 week holiday in Spain or here or there, and we never really get to see the full extent of the underlying programming and brain entrainment that makes up the dominant degree of the morphogenetic field to which we are all part of. Mm-hmm. We are constantly integrating and translating and filtering through a one world order of thought and behavior.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, we give up sometimes, especially when you reach puberty and you understand that you have to now go out and take part in the ludicrous play. Mm. And you have to take your part on that stage. And for some, literally they choose, you know, they don't choose life.
No. And that's more and more the case, isn't it?
Yeah. It's interesting how in places like, for instance, Byron Bay, which is in northern New South Wales, where I have family, and I've been quite a few times, and it is one of the sunniest, most beautiful areas with beaches and rainforests, and it has a very high teenage suicide rate, and which is astonishing, and not, because it seems the more sensitive you become to the truth, the more difficult it is to engage in the illusion.
Yeah. Yes, indeed. I guess from the template's point of view, this kind of limited consciousness that we've got, that is, we're born limited. We're born with a genetic structure which has been somehow interfered with, and I know this is quite a widely held view now. And then we're born into a society which really quickly now gets us into school. It gives us a name. It gives everything else a name. It gives you little cash registers with little plastic money in it. And all of these ideas get put into this limited genetic structure. Yes. But what we're saying, I believe, is that the full us is still there.
Absolutely.
That 97% of our genetic structure, it's which there. Is currently non-functional, is accessible. And that is what this solution is aiming to revivify, isn't it?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And it is so doable. And, you know, the beginning of it, the beginning of it is to understand what happened, and why, and to some degree when, and how that has impacted who you have mutated into. And to understand that your personality has basically been formed by your ability to overcome obstacles. Because life becomes the cost of living and a series of obstacles. And you are defined by your ability to overcome those obstacles. And, you know, usually those obstacles are put in your way in order to strengthen you to become a part of the tax-paying, working 9-to-5 society.
Overcoming the obstacles is a matter of compliance.
It is, and it's a daily exercise that takes you away from who you really are.
And fundamentally, the more compliant you are, the more wealth. Well,
yeah.
The more of the fake wealth you're allowed to
accumulate,
which nominally removes a lot of obstacles, so that in the end, you know, if you're really compliant and, you know, I would say really criminal as well myself,
yeah,
you end up with big houses all over the world, big boats, all that kind of stuff, but they don't end up happy, do they?
Absolutely not, no.
In fact, you end up involved in all sorts of stuff and with all sorts of people, yeah, that if you really had free choice, you probably, from the word go, wouldn't want to do.
No. But it is, you know, once you've identified the problem, then the solution makes so much more sense. And you can engage in it consciously.
Yeah.
And understand the cogs and wheels of your own inner process and how it interfaces with the external. And then by doing that, you can understand how actually simple it is to overcome it. And that actually brings you to the core challenge, which as far as I can tell at this time in history, our challenge is to receive, decipher, utilize, and transmit the intelligence encoded in light. That's it.
Yeah.
That's it.
Which is what our entire system is designed to do.
It's designed to do.
Through the eyes, the pineal, and all of that. We are the experience of the mother of form rising to meet the father of consciousness.
Absolutely.
And the father of consciousness is light. It's not only energy, it's information. And that is what's being limited by the limitations on our genetic structure, and then further
and
down the line.
And the endocrine system.
The endocrine system, yeah.
And other aspects that we may explore as we get deeper into the process itself, because there are many ways that our consciousness is being suppressed. I mean, obviously, as you've mentioned, the core thing is the mutation of the divine immortal blueprint, the modification of the blueprint. And yet, so powerful is that blueprint that if it was left alone, it would regenerate itself.
Mm.
And so there are many other programs in place to ensure that that does not happen. Psychosocial, economic, political, chemical, and very much religious.
Yeah.
Just to name a few. And yes, that's what we're battling in every moment, every day.
Yeah. But what, I guess, one way of looking at it is to suggest that what we're talking about here is a kind of mixing of genetic structures. It's not that large chunks of the original genetic structure were cut away. It's that other things were added to them. They were kind of limited in their access to the system. So they're still there, yeah, and they can be switched back on again.
They can be resurrected, and not that difficult. It's not that difficult.
And the template, one of the unique things about the template, in my opinion, is that it has hit on a thing where we can see that happening, where we can put forward the idea that we start with electromagnetic circuits. We don't need to tell people that are listening, I'm sure, that electromagnetism and light are synonymous, really. Yes. And we've all done the most amazing thing, I think, about it at this introductory level is that we have the muscle testing to show that these circuits are disconnected.
That's
but
right.
There's a weakness that has been induced, and then we can show, can't we, that it can be strengthened.
Yes. I mean, there's a lot of information that is imparted through the template as a whole model, in order to give people an informed choice so that they know what it's all about, rather than just walking in and boom, you know, experiencing that. Mm. And all of that is very important. For some people, they might come to a workshop and actually feel that they know much of what is being said. There's others who know maybe half of it, and there's others who know nothing. And so it's really important to lay the entire feast out, and they can, you know, they can embrace whatever they need to. Mm. And that's brilliant. But the bottom line is electromagnetism. The bottom line is circuitry. Circuitry is the delivery system for the energetic nature of source consciousness into the body. It is the most fundamental animating energy that activates the entire human hologram, is circuitry.
Yeah.
And that is what you come for, and that's what you take away.
And I think to a certain extent, I mean, as you know, the information was the first thing that hit me right between the eyes. I was so astonished by what I was hearing before we even got around to doing the original, you know, the first template encounter, the sort of alchemical thing which changes you inside. But if all that hits you to start with is the reconnection of the first 12 circuits, then you are going to end up being in a position where you're going to have a tendency to start seeking out the information that accompanies it anyway.
Yes. Yes, it's an interesting process because it is so circular that it's difficult to really know where it begins and ends.
Mm.
And literally every alchemical experience is embedded in every other alchemical experience because it's all fractals.
Yeah.
And that first ceremony will create a stable platform on which you can resolve much of your own domestic issues and much of what you think it means to be a human being. And once you've put to rest those very debilitating aspects of your life, namely relationships, relationship is really what debilitates most people.
Because a lot of relationship is defined by distribution of power now, isn't
yes.
it? That's not just personal, all relationship
yeah.
is to do with who's got the power and who hasn't. And
yes.
that's really where the game lies.
That's right.
And that's why I think that first ceremony is so crucial, is it's actually dealing with the mess we find ourselves in actually inside, isn't it?
Yes.
It deals with fear
yes.
and power.
And what is so beautiful about it is that there is no blame-shame game involved. Mm. It's intensely transpersonal. Because I know that for many years people have been, for want of a better word, in the alternative community, looking to heal the inner child through rebirthing and so forth. And that has involved a degree of therapy. therapy is a process that can actually throw you into the trauma vortex. Mm. And the body doesn't know the difference.
It's kind of making you revisit stuff that you'd rather not revisit, isn't it?
That's right. And it is not engaging the higher physics of creation. It is not letting you realize that it is the embodiment of the healing that is required, because we've been doing it mentally, you know, with the beginning of psychotherapy mentally, and then we've been dealing with it therapeutically through emotional release and understanding, but it has to be embodied. As we say, you know, the new paradigm will not be born of the mind, it will be understood in the mind, felt in the heart, and very importantly, made tangible in the body, which requires an acceleration of electromagnetic input, because that is what we are not receiving. The genetic modification of the blueprint has resulted in a very minimal degree of electromagnetic download into the human hologram. And as we said, electromagnetism, which is another word for tantra, electricity male, magnetism female, because it's given this scientific name, electromagnetism, that has kind of left out the magic and the ecstasy of what electromagnetism actually is.
And the profound statement of balance that it is, because changes in magnetic field lead to the generation of electricity, and electricity leads to magnetic fields. So you effectively have like a horizontal wave and a vertical wave that are in perfect synchrony, and they can only exist with each other.
Right.
It's not a matter of power over, it's a matter of synthesis with.
Absolutely. And it is the Mahagaya Tantra of creation. It is the one monadic consciousness separating and dividing into those two potencies of creation for one reason only, and that is to enjoy relationship and share love.
To give and receive love in all that we do.
And all that we do.
And you'd be hard-pushed to see that that was the key to the game by looking out at it.
Absolutely. That's what it looks like.
I think the blame thing's really important as well, because it is one of the really clever things about a lot of the writing that associates the template, is that it's constantly removing blame. Even the dark power holders, people will know it's one of my favourite quotes, that as the time draws, they've done their job well, as the time draws near when their influence upon us is no longer useful, they will be drawn back to the heart of the nothing, all and nothing manifesting galaxy, where they will be duly rewarded because their sacrifice has been great.
It has. In fact, you know, those beings that we see who are perpetrating the atrocities are in a state of intense suffering, and they have been as much used as the rest of us. They're just the broken toys of those who are truly running this experiment. And so, you know, that's part of this ability to become the observer and that's one of the first steps you take as you draw back from that anger and rage that people get into when they endlessly expose themselves to the catalogue of atrocities through all the stuff they're getting off the internet and the books, and the conspiracy theories, which are not conspiracy theories, but the true reality, and they go through that stage of outrage and anger, and then they understand that that's why they came. So, you know, don't be angry at the problem. Just embody the solution.
Exactly. We are here to take responsibility for this.
Yeah.
And I think it's worth looking, when we're talking about blame, obviously the other side of that is forgiveness, and that is where it all starts.
That's where it all starts.
And it's why the first ceremony is so magical, because that's what you spend, when we're talking about the first seven circuits, which are associated with water and air, they are all to do with forgiveness, the actual spoken words we use, but also you've got that fantastic mirror. You are looking into your own eyes whilst you do this forgiving.
Yes.
And
that is how the whole model was birthed, at conception and before that. at the choice that led to the conception, as you made the choice to enter conceptual existence, and you chose the egg and the seed that created the Visca Pisces, the gateway, the opening through which you entered into this. And yes, we use the mirror, but the people should also know that as all of these alchemical experiences that we have called ceremony, that they are all being put onto DVD. And rather than the mirror, we are using the geometry that reflects water. Mm. And it works just as well. Although I personally feel that once people have seen that and they understand the dynamic, they should go and have a little talk with themselves in the mirror. Mm. Because it is a very, very powerful shamanic experience.
I think that's a really good example of how the template has developed and how it is that nobody knew what it was going to be. What any of it's going to be until the next bit comes along is that we started,
yeah.
And I really like meeting people in physical space and doing that first ceremony with the mirrors, with the candle flame, with the earth crystal, because there's something very real about it. But we had no idea at that point that geometry was going to be involved at all.
No.
And yet, from the second ceremony, geometry is what it's all about. So.
Yes.
The thing we see when we look at the website and when we do it on either from the DVD or from the Vimeo vid on the website,
yes,
is we realize that because the first ceremony is associated with the elemental heart of creation, with earth, air, fire, water and ether, that therefore there are platonic geometries that are associated with
that's
that.
That's right.
So we kind of back engineered the geometry onto the first ceremony.
Onto the first ceremony. And actually geometry is just a component. It is one of three components within the alchemy. And, you know, there is the geometry, which is the language of light that our very blueprints are created from.
Geometry is the way number unfolds into space.
That's right.
Physical expression of everything is geometric.
Geometric, yes. Yeah. And then there is sound, and that sound takes the form of octaves and harmonies, and the sound also of your own voice, mm-hmm. and the sound of you organizing your belief and acknowledgement of your true identity into language.
Yeah.
And that, you know, we are still using that. We have to, because that's the reality that we are in.
It's what we've got.
It's what
but
we've
again,
got.
We're becoming aware, really, really aware of the power of words, the power of breath, that we spell words,
that's
and
right.
that words are spells.
Yes, yes. And that words are geometry. If you look at them, they're just lines and angles and curves and arcs and their geometry.
Yeah.
And with every ceremony that came in, with every code that came in after the sixth and the seventh, I kept thinking, you know what, I don't think there's even a spoken code to go with this one. You know, I think I was just trying to get out of the job of bringing them in, but there was, and there still was, and there was, but there will come a time when they will no longer need that. It'll just be a piece of geometry, with or maybe even without the frequencies that resonate with that geometry.
Yeah.
Because right now the frequencies that we're using actually resonantly express the sound that each piece of geometry is making.
And of course the geometry does work anyway. Like if you look at a tetrahedron, then you will reconnect your fire circuit.
That's
what the words do is they somehow instill the permanence, don't they?
The permanence
of the reconnection.
Yes.
And I mean, the latest geometry, the geometry that goes with these, the surprise ceremonies that have turned up in the last 2 or 3 years, I've been showing people films of that, and you can see they are bewitched by it the instant they see it.
Well, you know, even a person who just walks into a room and sees a flower of life, or as we call it, creation mandala, they will reconnect 5 double terminated circuits that will download electromagnetic information into their biocomputer while they're looking at that.
Mm.
And that information has gone in there and will not come out.
Mm.
It's done. You cannot unring a bell. And we'll say walk out of that room and carry on with their lives, and they have absolutely no idea what just happened.
Mm-hmm.
They are carrying that download as a point of reference that will forever have its say within every decision they make from their, you know, it's just, it is imprinted in every DNA.
And that is why people, I think, find, or most people, it's not entirely everybody, but nearly everybody falls in love with the geometry when they see it. When I do the sacred geometry introduction and I've got all those beautiful pieces, you don't get a break for tea and biscuits halfway through because you are literally swamped by people wanting to come and handle the geometry. And I'm sure it's partly because of the beauty. It is, and they're all a beautiful synthesis and a balance. You can see that. The symmetry of them is attractive in itself. Yes. But I'm sure it's the data as well.
It is, and it actually bridges all worlds. Mm. And all cultures, creeds, colour, gender, belief systems. It is the universal language. Mm. And it bypasses all of that programming. I remember when my son went with a crew of his friends here in Glastonbury to Bristol to see a hip-hop band, and they all had geometry on, and they were on the front seat, front row. And eventually one of the band members just stopped, and he said, "Look, what are you guys wearing down there?" And they all took off their geometry and handed it to the band, you know, because, and that is geometry. It is a seed.
Yeah.
And it's the more that gets out there, the better.
Well, again, wearing the geometry, you find it's a great way of getting it out into the public, you know, at the till, at the supermarket, all that kind of place. If you've got a piece of this on, people want to talk about it.
I can't believe how many times that has happened in the most unlikely of places. And it is so non-confrontational. You cannot argue with geometry because it's not trying to sell you anything or tell you anything. Mm. It just is. And all it does is set up resonant feedback between it and its own existence within your divine immortal blueprint. Mm. And through that resonant feedback creates a total equal relationship of shared understanding.
Breaks down barriers between people.
Yes.
So we've got the spoken code, we've got the geometry. What's the third?
Well, the spoken code is also your presence. Your presence is an alchemical component, obviously, because that presence that you inhabit as you sit there in that alchemical experience is the culmination of sometimes many lifetimes, not to mention many, many decisions and experiences and left turns and right turns and phone numbers or emails or chance encounters. It's just total synchronistic shamanic magic. And there you are.
Yeah.
Right there in the Stargate.
Yeah. And that is, again, that is absolutely true of the template. Yeah. It's been so for me that the kind of synchronicities that have brought me to it when I'm actually deeply resistant to any workshops and still remain so, you know, but what got me into the temp, I can see the series of events and special setups and special connections that actually put me in a position to meet you and Jiva and then not to be able to take it down. And I see that happening with lots of other people with the template as well. There's a reason for them being there. So it's your presence, your voice, your breath, and the geometry. Those are the three things we're using. And we are, when we talk about ceremony, we're talking about alchemical transformation. It's a difficult word for people to use. Yeah. But it is a statement of unity and harmony and intent.
It is ceremony is the mechanism through which what you know becomes who you are. And so as you enter into this covenant with or without others, you are entering into a portal of total recognition, and you are identifying and embracing your identity at various levels of how you've incarnated. And as you do so, those covenants are activated within your being, and then you go away and you integrate that into your life, into your everyday existence. And we call it the Monday morning syndrome, you know, because it is not a new age workshop where you go to experience the temporary feel good formula of having sat down with kindred spirits and and experienced a degree of healing, and then Monday morning it is a workshop you did. Mm. It's not a workshop. It is a point in time and space where you've entered into a portal.
And you've made covenants
you've made
with yourself.
Contract with yourself.
Yeah.
Yes. And then you go away and you have to keep that contract.
And bloody hell, things change as a result.
And they do. And it we didn't come here for an easy challenge. The challenge isn't easy. Mm. And I think we've all come to that realization. And there, you know, there's a lot of resistance. Well, there was a lot more resistance to that when we began the template, because it was pre-9/11. And a lot of times in workshops, when we would be trying to talk about the reconnection of the third eye, the crown, the auric, and the throat as circuits that all fed this cosmic data into the pituitary hypothalamus pineal complex, and how that was going to actually change the ratio of neurochemicals and neurotransmitters in the brain, which would alter brainwave activity, which would in turn affect the visual audible feedback of your direct environment, and that would affect the field. And people would come back with, what's in it for me? You know?
Yeah.
They would come back with, how is that going to help with my getting a better job, a better relationship, more holidays, blah, 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 you know. And then 9/11 hit, and it was a blessing in disguise. And I don't say that glibly, because it was tragic. Mm. However, to be honest, more people than that die every day through genocide and poisoning
and war. Medicine.
Yeah, exactly.
Medicine's one of the biggest killers in America, I gather.
Yes.
Iatrogenic death, death caused by doctors.
More pharmaceutical cures to create more diseases that need more pharmaceutical cures.
Yeah.
And so, but after 9/11, people started to understand that it was not about them.
Mm.
It was about the unified field and the part that they came here to play in order to affect that field. And you have to affect the field.
Yeah. Because we are to assert, well, we are, all of us, individually, responsible for what happened on 9/11. We're all kind of responsible for everything that's going on because of the way we approach the world. And admittedly, it is to do with our disconnection. Well, it is, but even that was an act of cooperation.
That's right. And that's an interesting word you use, responsible, because what it means is the ability to respond.
Mm.
And it's all about how you are responding.
Mm.
And you know, in every moment of every day, how you are responding. Choose love, choose love, choose love. But what form does that love take? Because there are those who would define that, particularly in the New Age, as a falsely coated, sugary exercise in being positive, as we call the rainbow fascist being positive police. And it isn't. It is being true. It is being true to yourself, true to the moment, true to your family, true to your community, true to your race.
Mm.
And that requires you to have the courage to speak the truth that comes into your mind in any moment that is stimulated by the ability to embrace the light of who you are.
Mm. Love and truth are effectively intimately connected.
Intimately.
And they are to a great extent the opposite of fear. The opposite of fear is love.
Yes.
Really throws a, really when I found, when I read that first of all, that really threw a new perspective on love. And we've also, Jess and I have been talking about the phrase unconditional love, which comes out of the New Age a lot. And we know from our study of words that to put a word in front of another word devalues the original word. So love is one thing.
Yeah.
Unconditional love is, by definition, circumscribed.
Yes.
Circumscribed version of love, and you're not helping. The unconditional really doesn't help. No. There is only love.
Yes. In fact, it's so true what you've just said, because whose conditions are we talking about here?
Yeah.
And that's something we come across quite often. Mm. You know, I recently put out a newsletter that was laying out the challenge that we are facing and the impact that the tent ceremony has had on our ability to understand the psychogenesis, the inception of our behavioral response patterns to everything, to all programming, and to psychocultural behavior. And this person was obviously confronted by that, and to the point where he wrote back and said, you know, it's all rubbish. All you need is love. That was my love.
Yeah.
You just didn't see it. Mm. It just wasn't the love you wanted or expected. But we all have to offer our love, whether it's, you know, to say, no, I'm sorry, I can't eat the turkey this Christmas because I've become a vegetarian. And some people might see that in one light, when in actual fact, it's very scary to stand up and be counted in many of the situations we find ourselves in, which we may be perceived to be acting offensively.
Mm. And whereas in fact, all you're doing is enacting your truth as it stands in the moment. And this is where this takes us back to the forgiveness. There isn't anything to forgive. Yeah. You are being who you are. And there is if it causes upset, if it causes a fearful reaction, or as it so often does, especially something like, I mean, vegetarianism is a pretty powerful one. Religion's even more so if you choose to renounce your family's religion. If the response comes from fear, it is because people haven't recognised that there is nothing to forgive, that we're all down here to do what we need to do. And I think one of the things about the forgiveness, I read the other day that what we're looking at actually when we grok forgiveness and that there is nothing to forgive, what we're actually doing is there's a kind of divine assumption of innocence there, and there's a release from the pain of blaming.
Yes.
You know?
It is when you come to that shamanic point of forgiveness where, as you said, there is nothing to forgive because all behavior makes perfect sense, because people are manifesting stimulus response patterns that can be traced back to, times within their lives when they have been abused and suppressed and programmed, and haven't we all?
Mm.
And so what you have to begin to believe in is yourself. And that is just the hardest thing to do. And the more that you speak your loving truth in any given circumstance, in any given moment, you will find that eventually, if you stick to that, everything else will come right.
Mm.
It will all fall into place. It's like, you know, you want to clear out your house, and what you have to begin with is a massive mess. As you pull every drawer out and pile up everything that has to be reevaluated, reassessed, and that is the beginning of telling the truth, is chaos and anger and resentment and blame and attack.
Yeah.
And I can tell you the Templar has had bucketfuls of that.
Mm.
But you just keep on, to thine own self be true.
Yeah.
And as sure as night follows day, you cannot be false to any man.
Mm.
And as you continue down that path, suddenly you will find that everyone around you is responding in like manner.
Mm.
And then you get to the real relationship.
And I think that again is something that Synchro and I have really noticed, because we've been living the changes that the template makes for well over 15 years now, and it has resulted in different relationships with new people, with people we've known for a long time, right the way through to my mother. You know, it changes what you do, and as you say, people's response to you changes.
Yes.
It's And that's what we mean. You said it's one of my favourite quotes of yours, is that the only gift we have to offer the world is our own personal transformation.
That's right. Be, as they, as more, and you know, commonly said, be the change you want to see in the world.
Yeah.
And by being it, you must take that literally, very, very literally, to the body. Mm. You must literally embody the frequency that will affect the morphogenetic field. Mm. And as far as I can tell to this point, that requires that you begin to resurrect your ability to be the full extent of your blueprint.
Yeah.
And that requires an acceleration of electromagnetic input into the hologram, which brings us to circuitry. Because that is the delivery system for the energetic nature of consciousness.
And those very first circuits, the first seven circuits we reconnect, are reconnected by looking into our own eyes in a mirror, or by looking at the geometry, but for the purposes of this discussion, looking into our own eyes in a mirror, or even more amazingly, if you come to the ceremony with a partner, you can reconnect those circuits by looking into each other's eyes, which really shows us the fractal and holographic nature of what we're dealing with.
Absolutely, and when you do look into your eyes, you're reaching the event horizon of your existence as the infinite in meets the infinite out.
Yeah.
And it's at that, it's upon that horizon that change is created.
Yeah.
And there are no icons on the altar. There's nothing to believe in but yourself. Mm. And in doing so, you recognize that you are the God and the Goddess. You are a fractal aspect of the ocean of divine consciousness.
A spark of the divine. And you can only recognize that by recognizing that everybody else is also a spark of the divine.
And it really helps to disengage from all the God impersonators that have set themselves up as deified entities who wish to explain and embody that God for you.
Mm. So to a certain extent, I mean, perhaps when we talk about God impersonators, it always brings to my mind a kind of various entities who presented themselves over the eons as creators of mankind, when in fact all they're doing is manipulating them.
Yes.
But you also get to realize over time that actually, in a very real sense, anybody who's claiming to be a priest is a God impersonator.
Yes.
In a way, because they're putting themselves between you and Prime Creator, or the Divine Spark, or whatever we want to call it.
Anything that does position itself as a mediator between yourself and the benevolence of your creation is suppressing your own ability to come to a full extent of self-realization.
Mm.
And they will, or it will, even an icon on your altar will short-circuit, literally.
Well, the thing is, the very fact that it's on your altar or wherever you've got it suggests that you're giving it some sort of power, and the only power you can be giving it is your own, so why bother? Why is it there?
Why is it there? For very, very purposely, it is a massive part of the program of the suppression of human consciousness.
And again, obviously, to people who have yeshivas or your buddhas or whatever it is you're carrying, it might be very difficult to take that on board, but the kind of muscle testing that we use to show that the circuits are disconnected and that they can be reconnected can also be used to show that that these icons weaken you. You can find out how to do kinesiology, it's ever so easy, or get yourself a kinesiologist. But it's literally, you don't even have to have a day's training.
You know?
In fact, if you come to the template, you will learn enough about kinesiology to be able to do it yourself.
Yes.
And then you can test your own circuits. You can have a look. You can see if you've got a strong response by looking at the sun, which you will have. And then you can look at any of these icons you want, and you will test weak.
That's right. And it's not a complex form of kinesiology. It's kinesiology, street kinesiology. It's a simple, is weakness or strength, yes or no. There, you do not need to take into consideration how hydrated you are, or what medication you're on, or if you've had homeopathics or fluoride. It actually bypasses all of that, because what you're what you're testing is so individualized and so very
fundamental
and focused, laser-like focused. It's very, very easy to do. And, you know, the problem where people get really tripped up is that they don't understand that it's a blanket program. And they think that there are little aspects of their religion and that they can hold on to. Mm. It's like, are you pregnant or are you not? You cannot be a little bit pregnant. Mm. You are or you're not. Mm. And that is the case with the present program of religion.
Yeah. And again, it's a matter of stepping fully into your responsibility, isn't it? So those very first circuits, the water circuits and the air circuits, there's seven of them altogether. We strengthen those circuits by looking into our own eyes in a mirror, which is brilliant, I think. And three more of the circuits in the first ceremony are also reconnected by consulting our own inner resources, though the ether circuits, which are the heart, the solar plexus, and the pubic circuit.
Yeah.
We reconnect those by closing our eyes and imagining our own internal sun, looking at our own internal light. Isn't that amazing?
That is amazing, yeah. And with the advent of our understanding of geometry, we can also look at, via the ether geometry, to stimulate that as well, which is also looking in because that's inside us as well. Mm. But, it is all about the sun. Everything comes from the sun and the sun comes from everything. Mm. And our relationship, we are solar beings. We are solar beings locked in a lunar reality, which is another story altogether.
We'll probably get to that.
We will get to that. but it is our ability to receive, decipher, utilize and transmit the data consciousness embedded in the light of the sun that defines us and will also liberate us. And that pops up throughout all these ceremonies, all the way to 10, and it gets more and more dynamic, where you end literally by connecting into the very center of the sun.
That was brilliant, that. Yeah. Who could have predicted that that's where we were going when we started?
I know.
What's so amazing about it. It would be very difficult to envisage or create this through anything other than, I mean, it's collaboration with your own psyche, isn't it?
Yes.
That's where this is coming from.
Well, you know, for us, it's pretty bizarre because we'll bring through a ceremony that's just so dynamic and so deep and far reaching. And at the end of it, we'll go, well, that's got to be it, because where on earth would you go from here?
Mm.
And we have no idea until those last circuits have been integrated and understood and affected the linguistic centers and activated the cerebral cortex, and then we're suddenly ready to imagine beyond where we could imagine before.
Mm.
And this is what I tell people in ceremonies. I tell them, I am on this journey with you. I am not any all-knowing guru, who came in with all the answers. I'm being slapped around too,
We could quite often see when we're celebrating ceremonies for the first time that you really don't have much of a grip on what's going on.
No. And it's brilliant because when we get the code and the geometry and we understand a certain amount, but it's actually when we walk into that room with all of you sitting there that we begin to understand, because you already know.
Mm.
We're just reminding ourselves.
Yeah.
You know, and, we learn, we say things for the very first time through holding that ceremony.
Yeah.
And each time we hold it, we have a deeper understanding through the resonant feedback with everyone who's there.
I can thoroughly sympathize with that, because I know that when I do a new talk, I think I know what I'm doing with the talk, which is obviously it's just a talk. It's a lot different from doing something as multi-dimensional as a ceremony. And I really don't know what the talk's about until I've done it for the first time. And
That's right. As
you say, people don't even have to talk to you about it. There's a kind of feedback coming through the eyes. You can tell what people are paying attention to, what they're not paying attention to. And there's a kind of inner me that's monitoring all of that. And as I'm giving the talk for the first time, it's actually modifying it for the next time it goes out. Right. So that must be even more so with the ceremonies where you're...
It requires a huge amount of trust and faith, not just in yourself, but in humanity. And, you know, the new reality, it's not new, but the holistic reality, the holistic paradigm will not be taught or learned. It will be co-remembered by us all. And we will stimulate each other to remember it through various processes and realizations that we can share.
Mm. Well, if, as we understand from the new physics, everything is connect, everywhere is connected to everywhere else, every when is connected to every when else,
yes,
then we're simply focal points, but we are connected to absolutely everything everywhere that's ever happened before. Mm. I mean, do you feel there's some sort of collaboration involved in the arrival of these ceremonies, or is it just popping up out of your own?
It's a very interesting question. I sometimes wonder if my inability to fully answer that question isn't a good idea. It may be a good thing that it cannot be defined, named, and realized in linear terms. I think that might be an aspect of its, not only its value, but its very nature. Mm-hmm. You know, we're in the early days, because anyone who's read World Bridger will understand that the whole process actually began for Jiva and I by being arrested and imprisoned for the growth and dissemination of marijuana. Quite a bloody lot of it, actually. And ended up behind bars with all stimulus curtailed. Just to be left in the darkness with the self and everything that we'd ever called our lives just completely dismantled. Mm. And
it was a big operation, wasn't it? They came for you in a big way.
They did. They didn't realize what we were doing, because the neighbors saw us measuring out powder, which actually was ground up marijuana leaves, but we then mixed with alcohol and distilled into oil. And they wanted the easement of our driveway, and so they filmed us and reported us, and the police thought they were coming for cocaine dealers. They're very disappointed to find us.
Yeah.
But they brought six police cars nonetheless, and all the guns and all of it, and it was all very shocking and very wonderful and very amazing.
Yeah.
Because in our society, we are not recognized or developed to become shamanic workers, you know, as children in old tribal situations, that child would be recognized. For instance, for me personally, I didn't speak for the first 4 or 5 years of my life and was diagnosed as somewhat autistic and deathly silent syndrome. And I think that was simply, I was marinating, you know. I was distilling things within. Mm. And that wasn't recognized for what it was.
You weren't engaging with the words and spells.
No, that's right. I couldn't engage very much with humans, full stop. And there was a very good reason for it. I was busy. I was very busy.
Yeah.
And so traditionally that person would be recognized as someone who was born with some configuration or other to tune into something that might become valuable at a later date. And that ability would be honed. I put myself through my own initiations, through various creating really dramatic circumstances. I attempted suicide, you know, and ended up in a observatory room in an asylum and things like that, you know. Mm. And I think we are all doing that all the time. We're shocking ourselves awake, you know, especially in the days where there were no workshops to go to wake up, you know. Mm. You'd wake yourself up.
Yeah.
Set your own alarm clocks and something.
It's strange, that, isn't it?
Really hard.
The workshop only came out of the carpentry shop some 30, 40 years ago. Yes. A workshop used to be a workshop with tools in
it. That's right. That's what I thought when I'm first told, oh, I'm going to a workshop. And that's exactly what I thought. Mm. And so, you know, the whole being arrested and going to prison was a self-inflicted wake-up call. Mm. And a very well put together one with the help of Jiva. We did a damn good job.
I remember you telling us that. I think it's in the book, isn't it? That it's actually on top of a hill and you've got plate glass windows.
That's
and
right. All, so come and get me.
Oh, yes, yes, here we go. No, we're putting on a show for you.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. We're weighing out powder in front of a glass window in the kitchen.
Yeah.
And so there you are and everything's taken away. And that was the first real understanding that I was being communicated to.
Mm.
And I can't say, you know, where that communication was coming from. And when I say that, you also have to understand, we all have to understand, as we've said, that we are all fractal aspects of one ocean of divine consciousness. And so whatever I was connected to, we were all connected to.
Yeah,
could be all coming, the time.
Could be coming from anywhere or
anywhere. Anywhere, anything, mm. Yes. So, you know, in those early days, I had to adopt the concept that was going around that I had a spirit guide or something, because that's all I could imagine. And that changed over time as I came to understand the higher physics of creation and how knowledge is always there.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, it's not actually personal.
No, it's there. It's, you know, it can be plucked out of thin air.
Mm. Yeah, really makes you realize just what miraculous entities that we are. We're antennae for the experience of the whole of our race, the whole of everything.
Were masterpieces. Mm. And that is where we have, that's our biggest weakness, is we don't know that. And everything in our reality has been designed to keep us from realizing that. Everything.
Yeah.
And, you know, once you realize your power and who you really are, you move into a state of needlessness and divine ambivalence.
Mm.
And power, because you've got nothing to lose.
Mm.
Because there is nothing to lose, and you can't lose.
And who was it that said freedom is just another word for nothing left to lose? As we get further into that process, this process of the template and the process of realizing what our reality is, I get to understand more and more what that means. That means absolutely what it says.
Yeah. And it's a massive gift to anybody who can get to that point. Mm. And it will change you forever.
Mm.
I remember once coming back from England to our little bamboo home in Bali and waking up in the morning to one of those amazing Balinese mornings of deep azure blue skies and bright green rainforest and the buzz of all the life that was in it. And I could see and feel and know that I was a few chemical tweaks away from the transcendent reality that we were designed to inhabit.
Mm-hmm.
That it was only a very simple matter of brain chemistry.
Which I suppose takes us to that, to those air circuits, to the third eye and the crown particularly, which bring to our attention the pituitary and the pineal and the hypothalamus. Because the pituitary and the pineal are part of the endocrine system. All of which is affected by the template, but those two are key glands within it. And the hypothalamus is some kind of fractal conductor. It's not actually an endocrine organ itself, but it is the organ which has loads of vortices and fractal and holographic parts within it that kind of deals with these other glands. And they are, the endocrine system, it seems to me, is how we understand, how we grok, how we see, how we feel about the world that we find ourselves in.
Yeah.
And there you go. You've got the pineal, the pituitary, the hypothalamus complex right there, right at the very beginning.
Yes.
And then it unpacks into the rest of the endocrine system. That's right. Later.
Because how all of this began for us was actually, it was a therapy. Because all we had was three circuits, the thymus, the heart alarm, and the CSX, mm-hmm. were the water circuitry.
Yeah.
And I was doing something called re-decision therapy, using those circuits to assist people to redefine themselves on a very emotional level in order to realize better relationships, and mostly in order to heal conception, gestation, birth, and childhood.
Mm-hmm.
And I was doing it therapeutically, one-on-one, with 2 to 6 hour sessions with people, connecting with themselves through the mirror to understand and to forgive and mm-hmm. to release anger, guilt, and regret. And I was actually using up 400 hours of community service to do so. So it wasn't until I was forcibly left the United States and came back to England and ended up in Glastonbury. And we were living very close to the tour on Wellhouse Lane at the Chalice Lodge there. And I just had just done a session with a woman who had been deeply sexually abused from a very young age by her father until she was 16. And she had never been able to look into a mirror until that process.
Mm-hmm.
Because she couldn't face herself. She took it all on, you know.
Yeah.
And it was one of the most miraculous and beautiful honors to work with this woman and her courage. And she went on to be a very powerful healer in her own right as a result. Mm-hmm. And she came to understand that she had chosen all of that and that it had made her who she was.
Yeah. Doesn't that come up again and again?
It's
all a matter of choice.
It's all a matter of choice. And
we are responsible even if we don't know it.
I know.
Mm.
Hard as it is to see sometimes.
Yeah.
And I was exhausted from it, and I lay down to just rejuvenate because someone else was coming later in the day. And I realized there were more circuits. That was for the very first time. And that was when I realized the air circuits and that they affected and it was the third eye, the crown, the auric, and the throat.
Yeah.
And that all these circuits went into the pineal. And I have no idea where that information came from.
Mm. Or even what the pineal was at that
stage.
No, or
even what the pineal was. So when I did look into it, and when I realized that when you took, this I learned from Terence McKenna, that when you took a psychedelic substance, its residue was discovered within the pituitary hypothalamus pineal complex.
Mm-hmm.
And that it was in that complex that neurotransmitters and neurochemicals were manufactured and their ratio was determined and set.
Mm.
And the setting of those ratios was in perfect resonant response. Not only response to, but created, morphogenetically co-created, the consensus reality that we all exist within, this mutant, mortal, fear-based paradigm.
Mm.
And that we held the same brain chemistry as George Bush or Saddam Hussein or Hitler, whoever, or any of them, or Mahatma Gandhi, or Martin Luther King.
Although that's where your own personal individual frequency is set, isn't it?
Yes.
It is the same as all those people, but it's also what makes you distinct from them.
Yeah, it does. But the degree to which you are distinct is very small compared to the extent in which it is dominant force that stabilizes
the world view.
Yes, that stabilizes not just the solidity of a table,
making it real.
Yeah, making it real. Mm. And when Jeeva and I realized that the reinstatement of these circuitry, this circuitry was going to bring in, deliver the energetic nature of creation or God or source consciousness back into those organs in order to rejuvenate them to their original function. we realized that that original function was going to be creating a completely different brain chemistry. In fact, once the entire endocrine system was engaged and rejuvenated, it would be changing the full heart-body-mind system and the chemistry of belief, in fact, and how that was going to affect the field and how it related also to critical mass and quantum leaps.
That's it, because reality is not concrete. Reality is a co-creation between consciousness and the other streams of light and stuff that make up the bricks and the trees and all the other stuff. It's all energy.
Yes.
And so by changing consciousness, it's a matter of biofeedback. The actual reality itself could change.
I think it's really important to mention something here, because it has been a desperate chant of the new age: you create your own reality. And they are telling themselves this, and they are telling you this, because out of desperation, because they see their reality coming apart at the seams, and they want to convince themselves that they can create it differently, and they're right, but they can only co-create it.
Yes.
And that is the very important piece that they're missing out. And that is when they want you to stop talking about things they don't want to hear about. Because what they are trying to tell you is that if you mention genocide, if you mention paedophilia, you're actually creating it. You're not.
You're not stopping it by not talking about
That's absolutely right. And the whole process of co-creation is going to be a process of stages, just as grief, you know, is a process of realizations, where you begin to awaken to the truth, to embracing the truth, to identifying it, to integrating it, and allowing it to become part of what actually inspires and instigates you to overcome it.
Yeah.
And I do not believe that these people have become a part of the solution yet, because they are not willing to actually identify the problem.
It's strange, isn't it, in that... Well, actually, it's not strange. It's actually absolutely what we've come to expect, that as the wider world starts, because it has no choice, to recognise the breadth of the paedophilia problem through government and entertainment and the church, and it just seems to get wider and more people are talking about it, that up pops a little influential school of thought that says, you know, you really shouldn't be talking about this, because you're just making it worse.
That's right, and that is the infiltration. And it's a very deliberate infiltration, because that movement was getting to be quite powerful, because there are aspects of what we term the New Age that are spot on. You know, their focus on crystals. A crystal will reconnect a circuit into your pituitary, hypothalamus, pineal complex and reattune you to the crystalline center of the earth. And that is so essential right now. And people who think that the earth is being raped for her crystals are wrong. The earth is giving us a piece of itself so we might understand her. Because that is our salvation in understanding that we are one with the earth.
And every time, just like when we're looking at the geometries, when you look at the earth crystal, you're forming a kind of mycelium of human consciousness in the earth, and enabling a mycelium of earth consciousness to form in the human, just by looking at the earth crystal, which of course is another of the circuits in the first ceremony.
That's right, yeah. And attunes you to needlessness, because you enter the Tao, and then you realize that everything else is an addiction, and that light is the faith, and nature is the temple, and everything else is just... variations of scum floating on the top and people of a stagnant pond.
People have absolutely shown that. I know that some people find it difficult to believe that individuals can live on light, but there are...
And love. And love. Yeah, the same thing.
You know, you can live by looking under the sun. You don't need to eat or drink. I mean, it's possible that some of us do, because most of us probably do, because we become so convinced of that need, but it has been well and truly demonstrated.
It has, and I think that the reason that we cannot denounce those things intellectually, because we know they're an addiction. We have to allow the body to come to that realization along with the mind through various organic alignments. Mm. And right now those alignments are not totally possible because we are still functioning in a very unbalanced dualistic reality in which there are about 300 new chemicals pumped into the environment every year. And so we are depleted. We are, you know, it's a very exhausting position. We have one foot in our vision of the true transcendent reality we were created to be resonant with, and one foot back here, where we are having to work to create the springboard that will not only deliver us the liberation, but that we can create the stable global field that will allow, you know, a child orphaned by AIDS in Africa to spontaneously join with that, with that new transcendent reality simply through resonance with their divine blueprint, which still exists etherically in every cell of their body.
Yeah. And of course part of the co-creative process is the morphogenetic field, isn't it?
Yes.
Is this field that's been created by the whole of human experience.
Yes.
And it in itself is circumscribing what's possible.
Yes.
But it's also being changed as those circumscriptions get lifted.
Yes. There are still so many taboos that those who consider themselves to be on a very potent and disciplined path of enlightenment, they are things that they will not discuss. And they will not only shun you personally, but they will actually malign you on social media.
Yeah.
As has happened quite often to the template.
Again, it seems to me that the social media have almost been created for that purpose.
Yes.
Because as there's all these positive coming together, not only of individuals getting to meet each other, but now networks of individuals are meeting up with each other, that it's necessary that this Facebook and various other social media are there particularly to be able to undermine the coming together that's occurring as a result.
Well, it's any system that organizes itself in this paradigm will be infiltrated and corrupted.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, there's the whole thing about how amazing the Kogi were.
Mm-hmm.
And Kogi was the flavor of the month. And yet, if you actually investigated the social structure of their power structures within their own village, you would find that they were completely patriarch. And the women were not even allowed in their temples.
No.
And it's because everything is permeated by a blanket disconnect that has downgraded the full spectrum of frequencies that would be available were we even in a third dimensional reality, which we are not.
No.
We are in a lower octave of that called duality.
Yeah.
And so, you know, even this beautiful so-called New Age movement that started out to be all about our ability to free ourselves from programs started to create new programs and new levels of what they determined was the new morality and the new do's and don'ts.
Yeah.
And, you know, and there we are.
So
I think this might lead us to the big word. The big word, alien.
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, I think that, yeah, yes, which is...
That is the big taboo, isn't it?
It is, and I've noticed that recently, that it's one of the two subjects that really does have a huge slide response in people. Even people who are critical thinkers and who are well-informed and all of that somehow don't want to look at...
No. Well, there's a lot of fear around it because it's the fear of being shunned, ridiculed, excluded, and labelled as crazy.
Mm.
And that is going on all the time. It wasn't that long ago, you know, when that tsunami levelled, what was that place called, I think it was in Thailand, I think it's New Year's Eve or Christmas or something. Anyway, it totally leveled this area and killed a lot of people. So it was in Indonesia. So Jeeva and I decided to do a fundraiser, and to, first of all, we were going to hold a ceremony and all the profits would go to them.
Yeah.
And we began it with a free talk. And this was in Ubud, which is a yoga raw food mecca, has become of workshops for New Age. And quite a lot of the community turned up and they sat through a fair amount of the talk as we talked about energy and circuits and chakras, and that was fine. And then we put on the film, the phenomenon film, Genesis Revisited. And as soon as it became obvious that it was going to investigate something quite dark to do with alien intervention and along those lines, they literally got up and walked out. There's about three people left.
Yeah.
They were absolutely furious. And it was literally a few months ago that a friend of mine attended a very small tent ceremony that I held in Ubud, and he said that he had just been to the yoga barn for a night of music, and at the very end they knew he was a street performer and a rapper and a dancer, and they gave him the mic to just finish the evening off, and he started to speak about the world situation and the things that we were facing that were difficult, and the mic was just whipped away from him, and he was saying, and they said, no, I'm sorry, you can't speak about anything like that. We only allow love and joy and light into this room.
Mm.
And that really kind of nails the situation.
Yeah.
And that is the program of suppression that has infiltrated what started out to be in the days of McKenna and others like him, revealing the true nature of energies and dynamics and social and cultural and traditional structures and how we needed to break away.
Yeah.
That it has now just spiraled into another religion.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, I think the fact that we unfortunately still have to show that phenomenon DVD, largely because nobody's produced anything better, is a symptom of the same problem.
I might
at some stage play it on the show, actually,
because
you don't have to see all the pictures. No. It's mostly in the words.
That's right.
And you can tell it's talking about the alien intervention, the fact that aliens, the Anunnaki, came to planet Earth probably some 400,000 years ago, or all the time schemes are a little difficult, and that they genetically modified the entities that were here before us, the original humans. Now there's always this claim that they were kind of hairy bipeds who are simply drinking water at the waterhole with all the other beasts and stuff, and this is the problem with the whole thing. They also genetically modified a load of animals. In fact, I'm now aware that there's a school of thought which suggests that every time we've had one of these mass extinctions, as a result, we now think of electrical planetary interaction. Yeah. That again, they've popped up, and the reason why there is suddenly a huge arising of loads of new, different, entirely different sorts of creatures is because they've turned up and got the laboratories running again.
Yeah.
Now, there's a lot of people who believe in this. There's a lot of people who've written about it, but there are very, very few creditable documentaries on it. And that phenomenon thing, I know we have to show it and all of that just because it has a kind of credibility.
Well, but I think that one of the most informative aspects of that film is the lies they're telling.
Yes.
They say more than the truth.
Mm.
They're really revealing.
Mm.
And what seems to have occurred is that the story of human origins was revealed by someone who was in fact a scholar. We speak of course of Mr. Sitchin, bless him, because the work he's done is invaluable. And yet there are aspects of what he presented, which were inaccurate at best. And we have to ask ourselves, were they maliciously so? And how much did he know of that?
They're almost bound to be, though, when you're dealing with such a huge palate as that. And,
and
all, in my experience, in my research, all the people who've come up with best new ideas have mistakes in them.
Yes.
Because you can't be entirely right.
No. But the problem is that because it's fallen into the world of the male-dominated, intellectually based, research-ridden, documentation, there has been no room left for intuitive realization.
Mm. Yes.
And so this information has been passed down through this old boys club of speakers who have plugged themselves into an endless touring circuit of America and England and now Australia. And they're all, you know, it's like when a deviation has been created at the fulcrum and you use the same system of retelling, that deviation is endlessly retold. And so now we've got some really awesome people who are repeating what is actually an all-encompassing and massive deception. And that is, what is the most disempowering thing that anyone, any sentient being could be told? And that is, I made you. And all of these texts, all of these awesome books in which these men have poured out their lives and their time is carrying this totally disempowering conception that man was created by the Anunnaki. And they say it right out.
Yeah.
They brought life to the planet. They created us. They gave us civilization. And what is civilization?
Yes.
Have you seen it lately?
Yes, quite right. Yeah. And there's a huge difference between creating something from scratch and modifying something that was here to start with.
Yes.
And that's what we're talking about. The modification involves the disabling of 97% of our competencies.
Yes.
Had it been an act of creation, we wouldn't probably see it that way at all.
No. So, and we have to establish, of course, that we are not victims.
We chose to cooperate
in this very strange experiment.
Yeah.
Very strange experiment. Yeah. The other day, I just stepped outside. It was freezing cold, but it was a clear, crisp night and just really starry. And I looked up at the stars and I just thought, this is so weird. This is just so bloody weird. Here I am on this planet where the most unbelievable atrocities are taking place. Atrocities that truly are incomprehensible in human terms. Incomprehensible. And why?
Yeah.
I'm still not sure I understand why or how it all happened.
And one of the greatest atrocities of the atrocities is the fact that many, many people genuinely don't realise that anything's wrong at all. And that's even weirder. You know, why it's happening and why it is.
Well, that's the only way it can continue, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. In the propaganda, one of the propaganda slogans of in the book in Orwell's 1984 is, weakness is strength.
Yes. Yeah.
No, sorry, ignorance is strength. Ignorance is strength.
Yeah.
And that, honestly, is what the New Age is telling you.
Mm.
Ignorance is strength. Ignore all of that and you'll be stronger. And they might be right. I'm sure that if you ignore it all and you wake up on a sunny day in whatever privileged white community that you're waking, predominantly westernized community that you're waking up in, if you can actually get through the day without acknowledging that a short plane ride away, your brothers and sisters and children are being brutally and annihilated through various programs
slaughtered,
of genocide.
Slaughtered, starved, poisoned. Yeah.
If you can, and I don't think they can. I don't think anybody can do that. I think when they wake up in the morning, I think all of that grief actually rains down on them pretty heavily. And it isn't until they've had their first cup of cappuccino that they're able to really talk themselves out of it.
And I suppose this is where for a start off, it's one of the first things we say is that the reason why all of the circuitry is disconnected is because of an alien intervention a very long time ago. And that is far and away not the most outrageous claim made by the template as we move forward either.
No.
But we're also saying that's why we're saying the solution doesn't lie at the level of the problem.
No.
That we are addressing that using alchemical encounters, using ceremony, using the spoken word and geometry to reinvigorate the systems because they're still in there.
Yes.
And what's more, because there's been a genetic mixing, whoever it was that did this, it doesn't really matter whether it was the Anunnaki or who it was, whoever it was that did this is also implied in this process.
Yes.
Their healing and our healing are one and the same.
That's right, because we are them and they are us and we are one.
And we were kind of robbed of our light bodies in this process, and they were either robbed of or never had an emotional body. Now that, to me, is one of the key points that has come up. I'm not sure it's in your writing, but it's come up in the workshops, that this lack of an emotional body is a prime indicator of why we're in the mess we're in, why we have such a trouble with psychopathy, why it is that so much, as you've described, incomprehensible trauma is being inflicted on people, and why so many people don't even notice it happening, is all down to that lack of an emotional component. And that the experiment that we volunteered to take part in is to see our light body reinstated, the template of light reinstalled, and I believe as well to see the emotional, but see the emotional parts of all these other aspects also reintroduced. So the whole thing comes out balanced, and there's no blame either.
No,
you know.
Now, when you're resurrecting, when you accept that it is a holographic universe and the interactive, co-creative cooperation and sharing of all light and realization, then there actually is no separation. And so it's inescapable that healing will be shared.
Mm.
And, you know, eventually that is the case. Yeah. You know.
And there is no separation. And this business of the pituitary, hypothalamus, pineal complex, actually defining the nature of reality, part of the way it's doing that is through analysis and separation, which doesn't exist. So just the realization itself that there is no separation make a huge difference to it.
And unfortunately, there are several, because what we're talking about here actually incorporates the higher physics of creation. And some of these realizations have been simplified to the point of idiocy and used as reasons to actually not realize, not to be in a state of awareness and realization of the shadow as well as the light. Mm-hmm. Such as, you know, that book, The Secret, you know, that the co-creation of reality and the realization that we are all fractal aspects of one ocean of divine consciousness means that we have to embrace everything. But it has been downgraded into the new age axiom of you create your own reality. And so, you know, if you've got cancer, it's because you created cancer, and it has nothing to do with the fact that you've been drinking fluoride or you've just, you know, been bombarded by Wi-Fi and so they take these things and they isolate them, and they're not understood in the wholeness of what it is that we're dealing with. So it's absolutely essential to stop editing yourself, to stop editing the input of what is actually coming into your life, because that's just prejudice. And to just exist within each moment and understand that whatever is coming at you is going to give you something.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
He's going to give you something.
That's what it's there for.
That's what it's there for.
Be it people, be it experience, it might be illness, it might be health, whatever it is, it's there because, whilst you are co-creating your own reality, the stuff that's coming to you is coming to you for your learning and your experience.
It's just a filter. Mm. You're creating filters, and those filters are being created in respect to what it is that you want,
mm-hmm.
rather than what is actually evident.
Yeah, yeah.
And so it creates a very false environment and a very false belief system and reality. And it's been homogenized.
Yeah.
And those who are in it, even as they awaken, they're afraid to say that they have, because they know they will lose their friends. And I've seen it happen over and over and over again, as people have reconnected circuitry and begun to download enough light data to understand that never was there a time when they did not exist, never will there come a time when they cease to be, and there's absolutely nothing to fear. And so they redefine what is negative and what is positive, and to realize that there is no such thing, and there is no, it is not being, the challenge is not to be optimistic or pessimistic, but to be the mystic.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, and the good and the bad, or the whatever, however we want to define the duality, one of the things I really like about the geometry is you can show that to people. You can say, well, look, here's a cube.
Yeah.
Now, if you put a dot in the centre of each of the faces of the cube and join them by beams of light inside the cube, what you get is an octahedron.
Yeah.
And if you do the same thing with the octahedron, what you get is a cube. So you've got this, and that is the nature of opposition.
Yeah.
It is etheric counterparts, and in the place where this experiment is being run, you've got to have them. You can't have a stick with only, only one end. And that's what all the business of forgiveness and divine innocence is about. Judge not that ye be not judged, is because there isn't anything to judge and there's nothing to forgive.
There's nothing to forgive. Mm. Yes.
And I think it's amazing. This business of, the fact that we look inside to reconnect 10 of the first 12 circuits. I mean, do you think that suggests to me that it's kind of serving as a reminder of the resilience of the original human design? It's a kind of reminder of our energetic tenacity, the thing that we're trying to restore.
Oh, we as a race are incredibly tenacious.
Mm.
We're still here, and we're not only are we still asking questions, we're asking bigger, better questions now.
Mm.
All of us, in the most extraordinary places. You know, we're talking about the word alien, the taboo of it. And it has been programmed in us so deeply not to question that.
Mm.
And if that is the case, then that is the question you need to ask the most. The most controversial question is the most important question of all.
Yeah.
You know, I think I told the group the story of when I went to get a foot massage in a spa in Bali before I came out here to England, and I was waiting in the waiting room, and a group of tourists came in, Australian tourists, and they were very friendly, as they are, lovely, friendly, chatty people, and, you know, they were very excited to be on the beach, and couldn't wait to get to the swimming pool and their cocktails, because they were basically just being liberated from the endless cost of living and survival. Mm. This is their 2 weeks in which they could let it all go.
Yeah.
And they were taking full advantage, and who can blame them?
Yeah.
And we had a lovely connection. And then they said to me, and what do you do? Quickly, I had to try and find the right answer for that situation that wouldn't completely blow them out of the water. So I said, well, I'm investigating and reporting on the true history of humanity. And the one woman that I had been speaking to her most, her head just dropped. Her chin just dropped to her chest in one moment. And she just shrugged her shoulders and looked up back at me and she said, "It's aliens, isn't it?" And I tell you, that was the last thing I expected from her. She was so a part of mainstream in every respect.
Yeah.
And yet there it was. And I said, "Yes, I'm sorry, it is."
Yeah.
And she said, "I know, I know. I just know." And she said, "But there's nothing I can do about it. I know that I'm powerless. So I just live my life the best way that I can. I'm as kind to, and helpful to everyone that I can be, and I take care of my family, and I just try to be a good person. Because that's all that I can do."
And that's important. I mean, that's a lot more than a lot of other people do.
It's a darn good place to begin.
Yeah.
End to end.
Yeah.
And, but it was a wonderful, wonderful experience because she was the tip of the iceberg. And what was made evident to me was that that word is popping up in places where it never would have popped up, from mouths that you would never expect to hear it from. And the last time I had a conversation about it was with an ex-Royal Marine cab driver who had taken an interest in everything in his reality that was falling apart and everything that was globally falling apart and coming through to him through all forms of media. And he was tracing all of these catastrophes and problems back to what he termed as the Illuminati. And then he said, "And I know innately within myself, I know that behind the new Illuminati, there is something bigger and stronger and darker." And he did get it out of me what I thought that was too.
Yes. Yeah.
And it is something we absolutely need to be able to talk about. And strangely enough, it is the very people that you would expect that would allow you to speak about it are actually trying to shut you up about it. Mm. And it's now the people that you don't expect to be speaking of it who are speaking of it.
Yeah. Which I think is a good sign. And it's another one of those fields of interest where you know, I think everybody, most people, some people have an innate knowing, but most people, I think, approach it with a degree of suspicion and cynicism. But it's like so many other things, you start looking into it, expecting to prove it to be not true.
Yeah.
And it just opens up, and there is just so much evidence of past alien presence on Earth and their actual quite intense involvement now.
Yes.
I mean, I know that when we started talking about the Anunnaki, Sitchin believes they kind of hopped back on board Nibiru and kind of scoot off and then come back every 3,006 years.
I don't think so.
I don't think they go away.
No, they've never gone. Mm. And they're here now. And it is something that everyone really needs to... You talk about being responsible. Mm. It's their responsibility to learn about these things. Mm. And sometimes, you know, they do have to come in on the ground floor.
Mm.
And sometimes that is literally a question of not drinking alcohol and not drinking meat and suddenly caring about animal cruelty and you know, some of the lesser things, and maybe trying to engage in solutions that are there at the level at which the problem is being generated. And that has its place, but it is really not the answer. But that will lead them to deeper and deeper questions, because as you uncover everything, you will get to the bottom of it.
Yeah.
And for many people, one of the most difficult things, even for those who have been ambassadors for quite some time, it will take them years to accept that humanity's true blueprint is one of a sentient, sovereign, immortal being.
Yeah.
And that all entropy is unnatural, and that death is simply systemic failure.
Mm.
In fact, all of life that we are witnessing right now is in the throes of systemic failure. We experience it ourselves at birth.
Mm.
We're born into that program of slow decline. And it's so difficult. This reality is so convincing. And that is why the reconnection of circuitry is completely and utterly invaluable because it takes down, it collapses these internal programs electromagnetically.
Mm-hmm.
It confronts death, not intellectually or emotionally, it confronts it electromagnetically. You get your foot in the door.
Yeah.
And then you can begin to unpack the rest of it.
And this is the beginning of a long process, isn't it? Not only for the individual, but because it changes the morphic field, it's for the mass as well.
Yes.
And, you know, it's work that needs to be done over time.
Yes.
And in a way, like say, the Anunnaki, who they were, what they did, doesn't matter. What matters is that
they're pretty impotent, yeah, as it happens,
yeah,
against the magnificence of what human being actually is.
Like you say, this vast interconnected sea of possibilities,
yeah,
which as we engage with it, with this miraculous system we've got, the actual sea of possibilities itself changes, and that changes us.
Yeah.
And the actual reconnection of the electromagnetic circuits is a kind of physical thing which strengthens us and enables us to
deal with more.
Yeah.
And more and more and more.
Mm.
And it is quite astonishing. Some people do take a long time, and yet I know people who have gone in thinking that the concept of immortality is ridiculous, and literally within days really considering death to be ridiculous.
Mm. Yeah. Yes.
To be completely unnatural.
Yeah.
And a total program of entropy that has come about because the relationship between space and time has been corrupted.
Yeah.
And time is no longer the companion of space, but the pirate of it.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah.
And that was an interesting thing to come into this work and actually to meet you when you were involved with the Mayan calendar and Jose Arguelles' understanding of the mutant timing frequency.
Yes.
And for us it was very exciting because we understood the mutant spatial frequency.
Yeah.
And how the two of them were conjoined.
Yeah.
And yes, the mutant timing frequency was something you could actually get your head around.
Yeah.
Whereas the mutant spatial frequency was something you needed to get your body around.
Yes.
You literally had to fight against that mutancy by resurrecting your physicality to confront that program by literally resurrecting a full unit of circuitry that flew in the face of entropy itself.
Yeah.
And that's what we're doing.
Yeah, indeed. And the first ceremony starts all of that by looking inside ourselves. And from then on, I mean, I guess we'll probably talk next about the next two ceremonies, because in my mind, they're kind of one, they're the kind of platform that we move on from. And that's when we start looking at geometry.
But we're still looking at ourselves.
Yeah.
Every single one.
Because the geometry itself is all, that has got its resonant counterparts inside us. That's why people love it so much.
Yes.
You know, it's like a kind of lock and key system.
Yeah.
You might be looking at a piece of geometry of a given shape outside yourself, but inside you are the counterparts of that, and the way your cells are built, the way your cells divide, the way your veins kind of get smaller and smaller and smaller as they reach ever greater extent. Everything, all of it, it's all fractal geometry.
Yeah.
So when you're looking at the geometry that we use in the ceremonies, you're looking at something that is singing to your internal codes. Even more, when you start painting or drawing or building geometry, you are then using your physical being to make something outside of you, which is a direct and perfect echo of the thing that works inside you.
Yes.
And it has a fascination beyond anything else, I think.
One of the most amazing ways to see all of what you've just said blossom is to expose children to geometry.
Mm.
They grok it immediately.
Yeah.
And they love it.
Yeah.
And they understand it.
Yeah.
And it does not ask anything of you.
No.
It does not ask you to believe in it even.
No.
It just is. And you just come into resonance. Yeah. It's all about codes and counter-resonant codes.
Mm.
And geometry just, it overrides.
It is also, it's beautiful and exemplary balance, the geometry. It's all so amazingly balanced, and in a world where nothing appears to be particularly balanced,
yeah.
I mean it is, there can only be balance, it's just that you don't see it, that I think it makes it particularly enchanting.
Yeah.
And it is true, the children love it. I was once given the opportunity of taking what is a 1.5 hour talk, and I was given 2 4-hour slots for it at the Green Gathering, which meant that we could bring all the toys out, we could bring the crop circle books, we could show all sorts of applications. And in that one we had children playing all the way through the thing. And it does genuinely work on everybody from kind of 4, 5, 6, 7 year olds right the way up to 80 and 90 year olds.
Yeah.
And it doesn't matter whether they're specialists or scientists. The scientists seem to be particularly enchanted.
Mm.
But it seems to go down well with everybody.
Everybody. And I think for the children, what it actually stimulates problem solving without even trying.
Yeah.
You know, there's one of the things that happens in Bali is that children are not, babies are not allowed to touch the ground until they're 1 year old.
Yeah.
So they're passed from one parent or a family member to another.
Why is that?
Because it's a very heavy program actually, because they see the earth as dirty, and they think that being elevated above the earth allows their connection to heaven or whatever that you want to call it to be preserved. Whereas for me personally, the closer you get to the earth, the closer you are to that realm. So it's just another one of those religious programs that separates. But what it does to that child is it robs them of crawling. And crawling is a very geometric function of symmetry and asymmetry. And the whole movement of it actually, it's really highlighted in Steiner schools, Waldorf Steiner schools, where children, before they start their day's work, they're put through a little exercise of touching opposite knees and doing all kinds of things that allow them to balance the left and the right brain so that they can come into a place of integration, you know. And just like we use the pulse synchronization meditation to override cellular denial.
Mm-hmm.
And as these children are denied that movement of crawling on the earth, which is so vital to their development, what it manifests as in later life is an inability to problem solve. And they will, you know, they get into, I came across it with a group of people that I work with, that there was a time when if someone came into the template gallery and asked for something that was different to what was there, they went into a panic because it was outside of it required them to create something new. And then they did more and more ceremonies, and now they love it when they get a bespoke order where they have to create something they themselves had never thought of.
Yeah.
And this, I believe, is what geometry all by itself actually does. It shows how things can flow in so many different ways and yet never disconnect from the source of creation.
Yeah. And it's, I think it's really key to keeping people involved in the template.
Oh,
I mean, we know that
it's very sneaky.
Many, many more people, okay, have done ceremony one than have done all of the ceremonies. It's like a kind of filter, isn't it?
Yeah.
Only a given percentage of people are going to want to do or be able, you know, afford to do or whatever to do all 10 of them. But one of the things that definitely keeps people coming is the geometry.
Yeah.
It's completely hypnotic.
There was a time when I got involved with Instagram, and I kind of don't anymore because it was driving me crazy, but I put up a Gaia Aqua Solar Star of Immortality, and underneath it I said, you've just seen this and you cannot unsee it. And it has gone into your DNA, and you know what? There's not a damn thing you can do about it. And it was, you know, and I didn't feel bad about doing that, because the only reason that anyone would have any kind of a dynamic response to that form would be because they were the resonant receptive field for that form.
Yeah.
So how could it not be anything but an awesome reminder yeah. of their true divine immortal reality?
Yeah.
And it was a gift as far yeah. as I was concerned.
Yeah.
And people loved it. They really yeah. appreciated it.
They know? Work, funnily enough, they do seem to work yeah. just as well as a digital artifact as they do as the real thing.
It's
a bit odd that.
They're libraries mm. of information.
Mm. Yeah.
That download in one glance.
I actually yeah. used that one probably to close this conversation actually because yeah. we had a good session this morning.
Right.
I used that, the Gaia Aquasolar Star was what I used from the third ceremony. And that, for anybody that's interested, is a stellated great rhombi-icosi dodecahedron. So it's the biggest expansion of the marriage of ether and water. And it's turned into a star by having points put on it. And it's quite a big piece. It's about as big as my head. And I went to have an aura photograph taken at a health fair that we were doing. We were doing muscle testing. We were introducing people to the first ceremony. And I said, I want to have two photos taken. I want to have one taken as I am, and then I want to go outside and work with, just sit with this star for a while. Then I want to come in and have another photo taken. And the man said, he said, we're not doing short. He said, because some aura photos, it'll change minute by minute. But he said, this one is a long-term aura photo. And what we photograph will take kind of, I think he said, 6 months to change into anything else. So I said, well, you know, humour me. You know, give me some sort of discount because these things are £30 each for some obscure reason. Humour me, I said. Give me a discount on the two photos and we'll do it anyway. So he took a photo of me and there was my usual... What was really good was there was the same aura as I'd had photoed like a year back by somebody completely different, which is basically a huge reddish orange glow.
Right.
And Jess's is exactly the same. It's really weird that we've got the same aura, apparently. And what there was like a green sprite right above my fontanelle, a bright green, smoky, lantern-shaped thing. And he developed this thing, and he said, well, that's what I mean. He said, you see, that green thing up there, he said, that energy pattern will travel down the right-hand side of your face, and it will go under your chin. It will go in through your thymus, through your throat, rather.
Yeah.
But that process will take kind of 6 months. So I said, fair enough. And I went outside into the garden, left Jess doing the muscle testing, and I just went and sat with this beautiful piece of geometry and just looked at it and, you know, enjoyed it, didn't do anything else. Went back in an hour later and had another photo taken. And I'm not joking, the green sprite, you could see there was a green ball of light just going in through my throat
yeah.
with a slight wisp down the right-hand side of my chin. And he was amazed.
I can imagine.
Because he said that is... whatever it is that's going on there to us, that represents 6 months of work yeah. in what you've been gone less than an hour.
Yeah.
And the guy that took the two photos of our auras the year before, he didn't know that we were running the same stall or that we were associated with each other. And we went and showed him. We went and said, hey, look, you know, we've got the same auras. And he said, I've never seen anything like that before. He said, you are perhaps... soul brother and sister. You might even be one soul in two bodies.
Mm.
You know,
yes, or as the sixth ceremony says, you know, you are the emissary mm. for your ancestral soul lineage,
mm.
and the closer we get to our realization of our holistic identity, the more we are incorporating diffracted aspects of self that have been denied through the genetic modification of our DNA.
Mm. And that's another important point, of course. If everything is connected to everything else and every when is connected to every when else, then as the representatives of our genetic line at this moment in time, the work we do through energetic solutions like the ceremony,
yes.
I think we can safely call it a technology, and there's presumably other things out yeah. there, but work that we're doing like that is running backwards and forwards in yeah. time through every pivotal point yes. that's affected by now.
Yes, absolutely. And... also, you know, you say he was surprised, and I think that is something that a lot of people who are gaining more and more circuits and accelerating their field electromagnetically are finding that they can no longer go to the practitioners that they were going to for attunements, of energetic attunements, because those people do not understand what they're coming across. Mm. Right after the first seventh ceremony, a friend of mine in Australia went to see her kinesiologist, and her kinesiologist told her that the ceremony she had just done had blown all her chakras out completely. And I had told her, don't go and see this woman. She will not understand what's going on in your body. And she got on the phone. She said, you've got to stop doing this ceremony. It's blown all my chakras out. And I said, no, it's got them working. Because the delivery system of circuitry is the most fundamental funneling in of life force. Yeah. Mm. And what is that life force is meant to animate all your visible and invisible energy systems to a level at which you would never have realized them had you without that input. Yeah. And so her chakras, because ceremony seven is so kundalini and breath. And it was just really super activating her system, and her chakras were working. And not blown out, they were working.
The fact that a kinesiologist can spot it is again verification.
Brilliant.
We see a lot of that, don't we? We see a lot of sort of third parties looking at people who've done the template and going, oh, this is a bit strange.
Yeah.
But what they're doing, and they're nearly all energy workers, and what they're reading is the body's expression of the energetic response to having done the ceremonies.
Yes.
I, of course, am extremely lucky in that my kinesiologist has done
ceremony too. It's good to know people who understand what you're going through, what you're developing inside yourself. Mm.
We attract a lot of kinesiologists. When we're doing ceremonies, that's why I had to have a little bit of health kinesiology training, was because they were giving me, because like you say, we know we don't have to set them up the way the kinesiologists do, because it's kind of, it's like guerrilla testing what we're doing.
Yes,
but they were all objecting from the, oh, how do you know you've got a testable muscle and blah, blah, blah.
Yes.
And actually, it has helped, I'll be honest. We went and we did a day's training.
Yeah.
So we were shown how to get the strong test with the hand over the meridians and take the hand off the meridians. And right, now, can you remember a time when you felt somebody was taking the piss out of you? And I don't want you to go overboard on this.
Yeah.
And that makes them test weak. And then you go, and actually we found that whole process really useful in the first ceremony.
And Jiva can do that.
Yeah.
If he thought it was necessary.
Yeah.
But he doesn't. He actually learned kinesiology in Texas from the originator.
Mm.
And I think, you know, without offending anyone, you know, a lot of it can be, some of it can be done without the intricacies involved.
Yeah.
And some of it possibly cannot.
You know? I think it can be done with most people just as you describe, and I think it's only when you've got a bunch of kinesiologists watching that you mean. But at the same time, I've discovered that what it actually does is it means that I can sit with every single individual that's coming to do the ceremony with us, and I get to do this fairly intimate process with them, with the magnets, and it means that they get a much better idea, although... We know that you don't have to do it.
Well, you've got a room of 150 people and you really can't do that.
No.
I really don't think we're cheating them out of anything because how Jiva learned it was through his...
Not to get 150 people for ceremony one. And
we'd
only do it at ceremony
that's
one.
Right.
You see.
Yeah.
After that, it's just in there and whop.
That's right. Well, Jiva, you know, he learned it because he became a alpha bioticist.
Yeah.
And, was working with alignments, skeletal alignments, and it was very, very simple question of whether something was aligned, some bone was in place or not, and it's the same with the meridian. It's either functioning or it isn't. It's such a force to be reckoned with, and there are degrees of yes and no, but they're irrelevant at that point.
Yeah.
And, you know, and I fully respect that, you know, when you're dealing with whether to have a herb or not, you really do have to assess that person in a far more intricate and expanded way. But we're not doing that.
No, and in fact, I mean, it's probably worth mentioning, isn't it, that the electromagnetic circuits we're talking about are effectively bundles of meridians, aren't they?
Yeah.
They're like huge.
Yeah. And it's like 3,000 meridians. Mm.
Yeah.
In the body, and we're talking about major test points that then mycelium out into numerous ways, and then, you know, we come to the point where it's no longer circuits but spherkets.
Yeah.
And fields of interference around the body and how they are actually interacting closer and closer and closer to light. And as you get to the 10th, of course, you're going into the hyperbolic center and through it into dark matter. And it's all becoming galactic and universal.
Yeah.
And you're discovering yourself at levels of existence that you never imagined you could. You could read about it and you could imagine it, but when you're actually experiencing it and it's allowing you to bridge worlds and experience yourself in very expanded states of awareness, it's really awesome.
Yeah.
It's a really tight model.
Yeah.
And I can't find any leaks at all.
No, and in fact, as I say, what's occurred to us, and I've no doubt to you as well, is that as you go through it, basically there's people who come to your ceremonies who tell you stuff that you didn't know that just simply back up the work that you're doing.
Yeah.
So it's partly a matter of faith, but the fact that we can show that these circuits are disconnected, that you can reconnect them by looking at a candle flame or a tetrahedron or any given piece of particular pieces of geometry.
Yeah.
And that tends to result in a fairly strong test. But
once
you do the ceremony and then you test it, you've got a really strong connection. And the fact that that always works. And I've had people say to me, as I said on the show the other week, I've had people say to me, I'll be honest, mate, I came along because I didn't believe that this was going to work, and I was going to show you that it didn't work. But the thing is, once you cut into the kinesiology, suddenly people know that something's going on that's a bit beyond their ken.
They're right. And I've had people who've said, oh, I don't need to be tested. And I said, well, you know what? You might feel that and think that, but maybe your body wants it because it'll give you a whole nother level of reference.
Yes.
And what your body actually experiences will just enforce everything else you're going through, and you can take that journey together.
Again,
it's really important.
It's the two things, isn't it? It's the information's there for the cerebral part of you. The circuit connection is there for your light body, for your physical body to experience it. It's two parts of the same thing.
Yeah.
So, well, that's been really interesting. That has we
scratched the surface.
We very much scratched.
That was my mate Litmus doing his song No More. A bit of the curriculum there. Very beautifully written, I think. And before that, we were listening to a conversation I had with Juliet, a lady that I've been working with for the last 15 years or so and continue to do so. It's always difficult talking about the ceremonies rather than actually doing them and talking about the geometry in places where people can't actually see it. And, of course, it's also not possible talking about it to see the difference that this process actually makes to people who come and participate in it, especially that first ceremony. Sean said before he went away, he said, so basically we need to adapt, which I think to a certain extent is what we have to do. And all of the work that's being done at People's Internet Radio is aimed at seeking solutions and enabling us to a certain extent, to manage the managers and to manage the situation that we find ourselves in, which is a process of adaptation. One of the things I like about the template ceremonies is that it seems to provide a kind of energetic support to that work. And as I said in the chat box, it's only recently that I've noticed the connection between the processes that are going on here and the processes that we engage in when we're dealing with the ceremonies. I think one of the interesting things particularly about it is that the world management team certainly recognise, as I pointed out before, the value of ceremony. It's one of the basic means by which the slavery is being enforced right the way from Bohemian Grove through the Knights Templar and the Masonic lodges and the courts and, to a certain extent, a lot of what goes on at school, it seems to me, is ceremony. And yet, we don't do a lot of it. Ceremony for us is mostly restricted to the churches. Mostly it's restricted to a bit at Christmas, a bit at Easter, and possibly births, marriages, and deaths. And my realization that ceremony is a kind of recognition of harmony and unity. There's statements of intent and minds being sharing an intent, if you like, and aiming to make people stronger, make people better, if you like, giving them a bit more confidence. And as far as I can see, certainly the people that we've dealt with over the last 10 or 15 years or so, it's really worked very well. Sometimes it literally takes years off people. It is, as again I said in the chat box, it is a very weird process. And as I say, almost every time I talk about it, it still weirds me out a little bit, the whole idea, the muscle testing, the circuitry. But that's fundamentally what it's about. Whatever we think about the immortality argument and the alien agenda and all the other things that get talked about, fundamentally what we're doing is demonstrating that before the process begins, there's a series of areas of weakness which bit by bit can be strengthened, and they can be strengthened permanently. And that is something that I don't think you get in many workshops. I don't go to many workshops, so I wouldn't know for sure. But for people to actually make claims and show you that there is a difference being made, I think is quite unusual. So my feeling is that certainly for me, and I know for Synchro, the process of adaptation that we've found ourselves going through as we've fallen down the rabbit hole has been massively helped by this particular technology. I think it's interesting that the whole thing started with a healing technique that Juliet was given by a man called Rob, who himself got it off a lady who I don't think is named, and it was handed to her by a scientist or a doctor of some sort involved looking in the mirror and healing some of the wounds that are inflicted on us during the processes of conception, gestation, birth, and childhood. And that these disadvantages that are laid on us, the child is apparently well aware whilst it's still in the womb of the noises that are going on around it. It's aware of disagreements, disharmonies that might be occurring in the home, aware of music that's being played to it, aware of most things really, because it understands things through pre-language centres or whatever. And it's possible to inflict a fair amount of damage just through careless action at that point. And then, as Juliet said, and as we all know, we're kind of born mostly into hospitals. We get taken away from the mother, which causes a fair degree of distress in certain cultures. I don't think the baby's left alone by the mother for months and months. And I remembered hearing a podcast, I think it was Clive de Carle talking to a man called Dr. Darko. It might have been Vibe's interview with the medicine man she was talking to. Can't remember his name offhand. No, it's not going to come to me. But he was saying that all of the illnesses and disadvantages that we endure as we grow into older life were somehow initiated in the first 7 years of life. And this is where those first water circuits and the healing therapy that Juliet was using to use up her 400 hours of community service due to her misdemeanors, directly try to approach these things, and they are associated entirely with trying to enable us to move on from the anger, guilt, and regret that we kind of build up in our early years of life. And that's something that I personally really felt happen after the first ceremony. It's also very interesting that Juliet was, as far as I can gather, a dyslexic when she was a youngster. She was quite an interesting wee thing by the sound of it. And yet she's turned out these two very interesting books. And speaking as one of her two editors, I can say that her use of language is unique. And her grasp of words is also pretty interesting. But that all of the manuscripts for the books were written down really in quite a coherent form and concerned subjects about which she quite clearly knew nothing when she was writing about them. And yet it was one of the things, it was reading this stuff and listening to Juliet that led me to doing the research that eventually led to me turning up on TNS radio as it then was. So there's a direct link for me between the one thing and the other. And in fact, the bits of her work overall, I think I've now looked through, because we're out there presenting it, I've looked through most of the template stuff now and discovered that although she didn't really even closely understand the stuff she was writing about, what was coming out of her pen was validatable. So the writing and the creation of the ceremonies also, when we've been present for the first celebration of several of the ceremonies, I think ceremonies 3, 4, 5, and 6 were all celebrated for the first time in Glastonbury, and we were there. And you can quite see that Juliet's as mystified by it as the rest of us, and it's only through a repeated celebration of these things that it becomes clear just exactly what's going on. There's definitely a feeling that we're all growing with this process together. This is one of the things that makes it difficult to talk about if you're not actually there experiencing it. The Sitchin material, I really don't quite know what to make of Sitchin. As Mahatma Coat pointed out in the chat box, there is a man whose name I can't remember at the moment, and I can't go and look at the chat box, who seriously debunked Sitchin's claimed abilities to read the various languages that he claimed to be translating, which is a fair point. I especially think that can be taken as a reasonable claim, because Sitchin himself didn't bother to step up to the plate to defend himself. As Mahatma Coat said, he basically threw his assistants under the bus. I think his webmaster bravely stepped up to the plate in Sitchin's place and went a couple of rounds with this guy, but I don't think anybody was in a situation really to deal with it. But Sitchin is not the only man who has been translating those Sumerian documents. There's a guy called Noah Kramer who wrote a book called The Sumerians, and he wrote about their legal system, their education system, their religion, and his translations are remarkably close to Sitchin's. And whilst it's difficult to find reliable sources on the Anunnaki specifically that are in any sense independent of Sitchin, it's not entirely impossible. There are one or two honourable exceptions to the Sitchin clone rule, and they also tend to be pretty much along the same line. So I don't think it's fair to write the material that Sitchin writes off just because Sitchin may not have been as credible as we'd have liked him to be. It's a complex area of research. Anyway, I don't think it particularly matters, because we still have to deal with the fact that only 3% of our DNA is functional. And I think that slightly bigger statistics are claimed about the brain and how much of it we actually use at any given time. And these are interesting points, because there's many, many people out there, obviously outside orthodoxy, who don't believe that junk DNA is a justifiable description for the substantial part of our inner structure, which for some reason or other is not coding properly. Anyway, the basic point is that we can show and do show on a regular basis that there are areas of weakness that can be shown by muscle testing, and that weakness can be repaired, renewed, rejuvenated, and that certain electromagnetic structures in the human body, it appears, can be resurrected by these processes. This particular technology, more than any other, I think, is a process of learning and a process of research. Most of all, though, it's a process of physical knowing. This is one of the reasons why I think it's important, is because it's energetic, is because it's felt in the body, and it is, to a certain extent, understood in the mind. And in the situation we find ourselves in, I tend to agree with Juliet that it's got to be worth seeking out a solution that is not functioning at the level of the problem, which is not to say that we shouldn't be seeking the solutions as we are on people's internet radio to deal with the problem as we find it. I think a twin-pronged approach, as it were, is perfectly justifiable. And one of the interesting things that Juliet said at the very beginning of all of that was that as a youngster, she didn't say a lot, that she was classified as mildly autistic, and as having a thing that they call deathly silent syndrome. I found that quite an interesting phrase. I mean, what a great description to give to somebody, isn't it? And I didn't know anything about it at all. And rather synchronicitously, really, this morning, I went looking on the internet to just basically read up on a website that I heard about on the AMAT show that I mentioned earlier. It's Grant Cameron's site. He's a Canadian researcher who, as a result of his apparent encounter with alien craft and quite a lot of other experiences that he had once he moved from being a non-believer to being a believer, has decided to concentrate on consciousness. And if you listen to the Grant Cameron pod from the AMAT show, from Joanne Summerscale's AMAT show, which is available on the PIR podcast page, you'll find out just exactly why it was that he decided to concentrate on consciousness, which is where we're going to spend the rest of the show. And funnily enough, the first article I alighted on his site concerns autistic children, and especially autistic children that do not speak. And he was writing about the work of a lady called Dr. Diane Powell. And I'd like to read just a little bit of the article. We're going to avoid some of it because a lot of the material in it, funnily enough, we've already covered on recent shows that we've been, where we've been talking about quantum mechanics and the holographic universe. But what he writes is, in a fair and just world, if confirmed, the research experiments just conducted by Dr. Diane Powell would be a contender for a Nobel Prize. The key words, of course, are fair and just. Dr. Powell is a practicing psychiatrist, John Hopkins-trained neuroscientist, a former faculty member at Harvard Medical School, and a contributor to the Institute of Noetic Sciences. She's also the author of the book The ESP Enigma. The scientific investigation work that Powell has just completed in the field of ESP was described accurately as data that could mute the great, amazing Randi Challenge. And the Randi Challenge is a $1 million challenge, offering a prize of that amount to anyone who can show, under proper observing conditions, evidence of any paranormal, supernatural, or occult power or event. So why does Powell, what does Powell have that is so good that Randi will have to possibly eat crow and pay out the prize? What is it that is such a major discovery that it might deserve a Nobel Prize? And the research has to do with non-verbal autistic children. In her newsletter, Powell described her research, and this is a quote, "Another source of evidence might come from mute autistic children, whose caregivers frequently report that their children can read their minds. If true, that suggests telepathy might be an alternative or default means of communication for those with language impairment." And funnily enough, I met another lady today at a place where I was helping out who told me that her sister didn't speak for the first 5 years of her life before one morning over breakfast coming out with a fairly impressive multisyllabic statement of some sort. So although I'd never heard of it before, it's clearly a bit, it's clearly not entirely uncommon. Next month, Dr. Powell says, "I'll be filming experiments with a 10-year-old autistic girl who was referred to me by my colleague Daryl Treffer, psychiatrist famous for his 50 plus years of work on savants. Her parents were initially strong skeptics, so they were startled when they witnessed her ability to read her therapist's mind. Recognizing the profound significance this may have for our understanding of consciousness, they reached out to aid science while requesting that their identity be hidden. The family first thought their doctor was a mathematical savant because she could provide answers to multiplication and division problems involving numbers over 6 digits, even though she couldn't do much simpler multiplication. Then her answers switched from an ordinary numerical format to an exponential one, immediately after the therapist began calculating on a device that displayed in exponential notation. This prompted the therapist to ask the girl how she knew the answer, and the girl typed, 'I see the numerators and denominators in your head.' The therapist then tested her with pictures and sentences that were hidden from the girl's view. She was able to type accurate answers, even if the sentences were in a foreign language. These sessions were videotaped by the family and sent to me and Dr. Treffert. They are very intriguing and show 100% accuracy. Are these reports of telepathy real? Dr. Powell asks. Stay tuned. And that's the end of her quote. A couple of nights ago, Cameron writes, the results of the film's scientific tests started to leak out. The results are absolutely staggering, hinting that severely autistic children who exhibit ESP abilities may in fact be receiving a pure signal and be 100% accurate on the given targets. Were the non-verbal autistic children accurate? This is what Dr. Powell stated in an interview on June the 12th. Quote, believe it or not, but I have data that could meet the Great Randy Challenge. I know that it is quite a statement, but I do. To meet that challenge, you have to have it reviewed scientifically, and they want a recommendation from a science journal. They want to see it in print somewhere. This is fresh. I just did these experiments last month. That's how fresh this information is. I have digit sequences that are 18 and 19 numbers long and 100% accuracy. The stats on that are incredible. I even had this one sequence, which is 162 digits, and out of 162 digits, there was only 7 mistakes. And when told that it is the wrong number, this autistic child got it right on the second go. The stats on that are just staggering. That's why I'm saying it is well beyond the great, amazing Randy Challenge, unquote. This evidence was filed, and if repeatable, will be conclusive evidence that there is a consciousness element that is independent of the brain and which can make a non-local connection with other consciousnesses. It will be the final nail in the coffin of the idea that the brain produces consciousness and that it disappears at death. If confirmed, there would be few discoveries in the history of science that would rival its importance. I've seen a bit of stuff about proposed mechanisms. A simplistic model of what might be going on has to do with the right-left brain and their connection to a non-local mind that is part of the holographic universe. This idea has been proposed by many people, one of whom is Dr. Edgar Mitchell, who's another guy who works with the Institute of Noetic Sciences and was, of course, according to some, an astronaut, although I know that some people have problems with that idea. Anyway, whatever. He pointed out that as soon as science develops a generalized theory of information, non-locality, the zero-point energy field, and the quantum hologram, that we will begin to develop an accurate understanding of consciousness. I theorize that there is a spectrum of consciousness available to human beings, said Mitchell. At one end is material consciousness. At the other end is what we call field consciousness, where a person is at one with the universe, perceiving the universe. The article then talks a bit about Einstein, Rosen and Podolsky and John Stuart Bell. Those of you who've been paying attention will remember hearing an essay read by Synchro a couple of weeks back called Beyond Theology, The Science of Godmanship. It's in the Ceremonial Solution pod on Dr. Rock's pod page. Those who have been listening for a bit longer will remember Carl Pryram's holographic theory of the universe, which suggests that the brain is a holographic sensor interpreting input from a holographic cosmos. That's in Doctor's Show number 71, Holographic Brain and Holographic Cosmos. What Cameron then says is the right side of the brain is the creative side that handles spatial abilities, visual imagery, face recognition and music processing. Most artists and musicians have dominant right brains. The left-hand brain, of course, handles language, logic, language and logic, and how we deal with the real world. The other analogy, and one that's perhaps slightly more useful here, is of a signal-to-noise ratio. The left brain is noise, in this case, and the right brain is signal. This can be seen when people are trying to meditate. People will complain that they cannot do it every time they try, and find that quiet place, thoughts keep coming into their minds which they cannot stop. Those thoughts are the left rational brain creating noise in the experience which prevent a right brain inspirational experience. Autistic people have damage in the left brain. Because of this, the normally dominant left brain cannot produce the noise into the signal as it usually does. The more severe the damage, the less noise there is. Consequently, the less noise there is, the better the signal is. That may be why Powell's non-verbal autistic subjects have almost pure telepathy. The left brain is severely damaged, as evidenced by the inability to speak, and there is nothing preventing the mind connection to the information stored in the zero-point field. And remember, these children, offspring, can also are said to be able to read the minds of their therapists and sometimes their parents as well. I guess there's not a, perhaps they think they don't need to talk. You know, if you're hearing everything inside your head, I guess, and you're new to the world, you might just assume, mightn't you, that that's the way everybody does it. And so you might be sitting there trying to communicate with these grown-ups and not realizing that they're just not hearing you. The idea of brain damage creating a clear signal is also supported by some of the greatest psychics of the last century who reported corresponding brain injuries. Peter Hurkos, for example, is considered by some as the greatest psychic ever, received his psychic abilities after falling off a ladder in 1941 and sustaining a head injury. Edgar Cayce, considered the best psychic in America, received his amazing abilities after being hit in the head with a baseball. And he made the claim that psychic material he was providing was coming from the Akashic Field, which is also, I think, nowadays more or less synonymous with the zero-point field. Joe McMonigal, the top remote viewer for the CIA work being done at the Stanford Research Institute, which was where Carl Pribram worked, suffered from brain seizures whilst in the army. The results being reported by Powell of perfect telepathic hits on 18 and 19-digit numbers, or the complete hit on 162-digit number, would indicate that the condition exists, that a condition exists, where the brain is receiving all signal and no noise. The left brain has gone on a permanent coffee break. The conclusion is, it is evident that we are getting close to confirming the idea that the physical universe is only a small part of overall reality. Material reductionist scientists will fight the idea to the bitter end, but it appears that it may already be all over except for the crying. The evidence is gathering quickly that we all have telepathic abilities, but because of the wiring of our brains, we are unable to pick up the signal. The accumulating evidence in quantum physics, along with the work like that being done with autistics by Powell, points to the idea that the brain is simply an interface between the quantum hologram and the physical world, which we perceive with our senses. That was one of the things that Juliet picked on straight away, is that as soon as we are born, the world starts imprinting on us ideas in the form of words. And, of course, our education is almost entirely left brain. It was one of my, when I started realizing that my education wasn't all it might have been, one of the first complaints I had about it was that I hadn't been taught any yoga, I hadn't been taught any meditation, I hadn't been taught any of the things which, as an adult, I started to realize could have been very useful to me. I was taught at school things like drama and art and music. These are also all things that are now being removed from the core curriculum, and they are also all right brain functions. So it's not just the autistic children who are suffering left brain damage. It would strike me that on the basis of this, all children who are currently entering education or standard orthodox education are having left brain damage inflicted upon them. And it has been my suspicion, and I know it's Juliet's suspicion as well, that one of the main aims of the orthodox world is to prevent us from realizing some of the right brain stuff that might be coming in if we weren't having the left brain so brilliantly trained to run interference or provide noise to prevent us from realizing this stuff. It's also my conclusion that Juliet and people like her that are coming across information which is outside the knowledge of the rest of us, outside the ken of the rest of us, are perhaps a little better at receiving the right brain stuff and maybe have a little less noise coming from their left brain. It'll be interesting to see where this research goes.